Hello, and welcome to Capital Compass. We are the official podcast of the New York State Catholic Conference. I'm your host, Jillian. Today, in episode 29, I'll be talking with Michael LaCivita about the Catholic Near East Welfare Association's earthquake response. On February 6th, Turkey and Syria were hit by a pair of powerful earthquakes. In response, the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, also known as CNEWA, launched an emergency campaign to support the earthquake victims. Here to discuss their relief efforts and CNEWA's mission is Michael LaCivita, Director of Communications for CNEWA. He's been with the organization for over 30 years, where he is currently a member of the leadership team responsible for strategic planning, branding and marketing, and program initiatives. He serves as spokesperson and media liaison and oversees the development of the agency's print and digital publications, including its website and flagship magazine, One. Additionally, he has won multiple journalism awards and is vice president of the Catholic Media Association of the United States and Canada, and a member of the board of Cygnus North America, an international NGO that engages with media professionals. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jillian. A pleasure to be here.
So to start, for those who are not familiar with the organization, what does CNEWA do?
Well, CNEWA, which sounds like a, I don't know, some sort of a name of an indigenous community of people, actually means Catholic Near East Welfare Association. It's one of those strange names that we were given back in 1926 when we were founded by Pope Pius XI. The organization was founded to work with the Eastern churches. At that time, there were a lot of things that were happening specifically in Turkey. After the First World War, after the genocide of Armenians and other Christians in the realm or the lands of that former Ottoman Empire. And we were founded to work with the beleaguered populations, peoples of those churches, and the people that those churches serve, not necessarily all of whom are Christian. So for nearly 100 years, Catholic Near East Welfare Association has been doing just that as an agency of the Holy See, but oddly enough, headquartered in the Archdiocese of New York, and the Archbishop of New York is ex officio the chair of our board, even though we're a Vatican entity. And so for nearly 100 years, we've been working in places like the Middle East, where the Eastern churches, in fact, where the church originated, but where most of the Eastern churches found or call home, as well as Eastern Europe, specifically Ukraine, Armenia, Georgia. We also work in India, where St. Thomas traveled, founded the church back in the first century. And there are two very dynamic Eastern churches, Catholic churches there, as well as Orthodox. And then we also work in Northeast Africa, specifically Egypt, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. Again, we work always through the local Eastern churches in their various activities that serve the common good for all people in their respective countries or communities. So the vast majority of people that we serve are not Catholic. They're not even Christian in some cases, but need makes no distinction. We serve all those who are in need. So I hope that gives a decent summary of who we are and what we've been doing for nearly a century.
To get into talking about the emergency campaigns and the relief efforts you guys make, I'd like to talk about the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. You launched an emergency campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
While we don't work in Turkey as we once did, the church is institutionally very small, very weak there. Turkey at one time had a flourishing Christian community, and particularly its Chaldean and Armenian and Greek communities were prosperous and important components of Ottoman Turkish society. In the last 100 years, those communities have been nearly erased. And so the church is quite small and really exists only in small pockets. In Syria, however, 20% of the population, of the pre-civil-war population in Syria, was Christian. We think it's about 10% today. And one of the centers of the Christian community, where the church is particularly strong, is in Aleppo. Aleppo was devastated by those earthquakes that you spoke about earlier in the show that hit on the 6th of February and actually continue, the aftershocks continue to this day. So we launched an appeal specifically because our partners in Syria, who we have had a relationship with for decades, needed the help. And the church, of course, regardless of the fact that churches were lost and community centers were lost, and we even lost a few members of the clergy in the earthquake itself, Christians and the church itself was, of course, immediately launched into help mode. And so religious communities of men and women immediately began to house those who survived the quake, those who had lost everything, volunteers from parishes, volunteers from the St. Vincent de Paul Society, the Blue Marists, for example, another community, were compelled to respond and immediately asked us. And actually, we reached out to them. How can we help them in doing and assisting them with their service? And so we launched the campaign actually the day we learned that this had happened, because we knew that we had to respond. That is our call, as we strive to live the gospel and reach out to those who are in need. And so we launched the campaign focusing on where we could make the greatest difference, and that would be in northern Syria. We've also, through our contacts, have been working with the very small Chaldean Catholic community that exists in southern Turkey and reaching out to them and assisting them as well. What's interesting about this, Jillian, is that this is the ancient center of the Church of Antioch, where Christians were first called Christians, where Peter, before he ever went to Rome, he went to Antioch, which is Antakya, modern day Antakya, which is basically an Arabic speaking province of Turkey that was, one would say, near probably the closest population center, densely populated area affected by the quake. It was flattened, leveled. This is the Church of Antioch that we're speaking of. The Chaldean churches grew from the ancient Church of Antioch, as did the Armenian Church, as did the Greek Church. And so this ancient center was devastated. Aleppo, where many of our patriarchs of Antioch, of various flavors, we would say Catholic and Orthodox, either live in Aleppo or in Damascus, in farther in the south in Syria. Even though those communities had been really devastated, their response was immediate and very effective.
How have the survivors and those assisting on the ground been managing?
It's a very good question. Well, at first, and I think they're coming out of that now, there was just absolute shock. Now, please God, hopefully you will never ever be in an emergency situation, but people, when they are hit by emergencies, respond usually two ways. Some completely shut down and have no idea what has just happened to them. And others, in response to it, go into action mode. And so, for much of the population, not all, of course, these are folks, I'm speaking specifically in Syria, who have already lost so much after 12 years of civil war. Aleppo was amongst the hardest hit areas where the forces of the government and the opposition contested and leveled that ancient and formerly beautiful city that was heavily Christian, and really it was Syria's economic and cultural capital. Folks were just devastated. This is just yet another tragedy to hit that community, to devastate that community. So, a people that were already impoverished, a people that were already in some degree of post-traumatic stress, experienced another shock, compounding what already existed. And so some have been having difficult times coping, understandably. They've lost family, they've lost everything if they haven't lost their lives. The church's response, Christians' response, volunteers' response, and what is wonderful to see is the conviviality of people reaching out regardless of their faith or ethnic or political identity, coming together, reaching out, helping, working amongst different groups, Christians and Muslims, going through the rubble, bringing food to people, opening up houses, churches. The Mektarists, who are an Armenian community of monks, have a very prominent school in Aleppo and opened up their compound to, I think, like 2,000 people, and are feeding them and offering them shelter and a safe space and electricity so they can charge their cell phones and contact their loved ones who have survived or live elsewhere. So it's a combination of chaos, not always controlled, and also just people in a state of shock. Now we're going into like another phase of the earthquake, of the response to the devastation.
That's actually exactly what I wanted to talk about, because although this event happened almost 2 months ago, and news moves on quickly, rebuilding takes years for countries such as these. So can you tell us about Kanewa's long-term commitment to those suffering and what it entails?
Sure. Well, we're first of all not an organization that was founded as an emergency relief organization. We're in these places in Syria, in Lebanon, in Israel, in Palestine, in Jordan, in Iraq, because that's where the Eastern churches are. So we're there when there was stability and relative peace and quiet. I can't believe I'm saying that about the Middle East, but before 2010, there actually was a period of stability. There may have been hostilities among some peoples, but nevertheless, there was some stability. Since the Arab Spring, everything is up in the air, or has been. And before that, the US-led invasion of Iraq. The organization, Kanewa, Catholic Near East, will remain there as long as there's a need, because that's where the church is, and we work to support that church. And as they strive to answer the call that was put to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? And so that's what we intend to do, and we'll continue to do it. Syria, it's difficult because of the civil war, because of politics and the political situation there. There is a international blockade that does and has prevented large-scale aid to come into that country because of concerns that aid will be commandeered, that it will be, how should I put this, a certain percentage will be pulled for other purposes, not for the purposes that are intended. We work because of our position on the ground. We don't import material. We work entirely within Syria, and we have our ways of ensuring, of course, because we're working with the church, that we comply with all federal legislation. And unfortunately, much of that has been lifted by this administration, so that emergency supplies could get into the country. But very conscious about following the law and working in compliance with it, and yet at the same time making sure that 100% of what people give to us goes to where it is intended. That's transparency, financial transparency and accountability is something that's very important to us as an agency of the Holy See. So it will not happen overnight, addressing the issues. Right now, we're just going, we're sort of like settling in our second phase of response, which is still providing food supplies, providing emergency housing. But now we're looking at, as the rubble is cleared, identifying homes that need some restoration, or folks will have to rebuild. Always the local churches is our partner, not municipalities, not any political structure, but the local community, bishops and priests and sisters who know those communities extremely well. So we'll be on the ground there for quite some time, as we have been all through the Civil War.
Now, you've talked about also being present in Eastern Europe. Can you give us a little update on Ukraine?
Sure. Ukraine has actually been one of our biggest programs in the last, I would say, our biggest programs have been, besides COVID relief, since 2020, when that pandemic broke out, and the Holy See asked us to focus on providing support to struggling communities, communities struggling with COVID and COVID responses, particularly in Africa and India. And then the bomb blast in Lebanon in 2020, and the devastation that the collapse of the socioeconomic and political system in Lebanon, which is about a third Christian. Our largest effort has been in response to the Russian aggression, the invasion of their neighbor Ukraine. And so we have, as again, we're a small agency. We're not the largest, but we've disbursed more than $6 million in aid from Catholics throughout North America, United States, and Canada, but also from our partners in Europe, and work directly on the ground in Ukraine in some of the areas that are contested on the front line, working with Caritas Ukraine specifically, but also with the Greek Catholic hierarchy, the Orthodox community as well, to provide those who have been displaced or those who have been directly impacted by the invasion with some support, whether it's counseling or food or safe housing. We're also working in Poland and Slovakia, Hungary, Moldova, Romania, providing assistance to those incredible churches who are witnessing the gospel, I think, selflessly and beautifully and so generously in providing assistance to the more than 7 million Ukrainians who have left their country since war began a year ago. Very active there.
Now, when we were scheduling this interview with you, you also mentioned that there have been things going on in the country, Georgia. Could you also tell us about that?
Sure. Something is very concerns us greatly, and this began in Russia a number of years ago. Georgia is strategically a very important country, Georgia and Armenia. It lies at the intersection of Europe and Asia between the global north and the global south. It's squeezed right there in the heart of it. And we're talking about two of the oldest Christian nations in the world. Armenia was the first, Georgia was the second. Georgia's government has, or Georgians have been really working toward integration with Europe. It's one of the reasons why Putin invaded that country earlier in what was it, 2008. And now up to a third of Georgia is occupied by Russian troops. The government has been, and the people, largely the people, have been wanting to integrate with the European Union and with NATO. And the role of civil society there, and when we talk about civil society, it's actually what we're talking about here are NGOs, non-governmental organizations that are doing so much to build up Georgia's economy and its civil structure, in terms of a democratic, flourishing republic. And one of those very active NGOs, if we have, when we hate to use that terminology, is the church. Catholic Church is tiny in Georgia. It's largely a Orthodox Georgian Orthodox nation, but the Catholic community is made up of Chaldeans. Iraq's only 200, 300 miles away. So there's an Iraqi Chaldean community in Georgia that's been there since the 30s. There's an Armenian community that the Armenians and Georgians have been integrating for years, and then Georgian Latin Catholics who've been there since the 13th century. And while the church there is small, it's very dynamic, it's very active, and together their charity, their social service charity is Caritas, Caritas Georgia. It's like our Catholic Charities. We work very closely with Caritas. They do amazing work in that country. Again, this is the local Catholic Church that's working, but working on behalf of the common good. So the vast majority of people that Caritas serves are not even Catholic. They serve the marginalized, the vulnerable, and everything from street children to women who are in abusive relationships or are victims of trafficking or other modern forms of slavery, same with children, as well as working with minority communities. And Catholic Near East Welfare Association has been a very active supporter of Caritas and of the local Catholic churches there, and Orthodox, I have to add, as they work toward the common good since Georgia began to open up after 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed. So what happened was there were street demonstrations because the current government wanted to identify these civil service organizations, civil society, put limitations on them. And by doing this, if more than 20% of their funding came from outside of Georgia, you were a foreign entity. And therefore, foreign entities would have to identify as such and could be ex it could be expelled from the country. Russia did this in 2012. Georgians are very pro-Ukrainian. They identify with the Ukrainian cause because the Russians basically, Russia did the same to them. And so they took to the streets. This was the second time that the ruling party had tried to pass this legislation, which basically also prevents it from entering into the European Union. So since I think we first discussed this, that legislation has been pulled. And the church is very much on guard here. When I say on guard, they're okay, we need to, how do we better? And which amazes me because Caritas receives so much support from local municipalities and even from the federal government for its work for, say, homeless women and the elderly and home care. It's just remarkable that the same government that is providing them at times with tremendous, not just moral support, but financial support, could also, revoke their ability to work. And they're Georgians who are doing this. It's not like they're foreign nationals who are up to no good. I mean, these are Georgians who are helping Georgians. So it's something to watch. It's something to be concerned about because that's a crucial area. Strategically for the church as we see it.
Of course. And I really want to highlight that relationship the Catholic Church has formed with, Eastern churches to kind of bring everything together. And I think it says so much about Christianity as a whole.
Well, the Catholic Church is a communion of churches. It's when most of us here in the United States, we think of the Catholic Church being of, well, we're all Roman Catholic. Well, actually, no. That the Roman Catholic Church, the Latin Rite of the Church, is one church. There are actually 23 other churches, full-fledged churches that have their own patriarchs or major archbishops who are in full communion with the Bishop of Rome, but they have their own traditions, their own rights and privileges, their own laws. And so this communion, this Catholic communion that exists, you're right. I mean, what makes it so remarkable is it is a communion, a network that is truly universal, truly Catholic with a lowercase c, and it works in partnership with so many other communities of faith. Evangelical, Orthodox, we have very good relationships in those areas with the local Muslim communities and Jewish communities in Israel. Again, advancing the common good.
Now, bringing it back home a little, as you said, although you guys work for the Holy See, you're based in the Archdiocese. I know Cardinal Dolan serves as chairman of CNEWA. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what his role entails?
Sure. Well, he's our moral authority. He's the chair of the board, and as a communications person, one could not ask for a better spokesperson for the agency than Timothy Michael Cardinal Dolan. He articulates our concerns. They're his concerns. He's been a donor long before he was Archbishop of New York when he was a young priest. He knows our history. He knows it quite well. He's quite passionate about who we are, takes it very seriously, as he does all things, but there's a passion for CNEWA that is quite clear. Last year when Russia invaded, he wanted what can we do to help? and was among the first, as Archbishop Gundziak, who was the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Archbishop in Philadelphia, just said recently, Cardinal Dolan was one of the first, if not the first, American cleric to visit of such stature, to visit Ukraine and to visit with the displaced. We were there in late April last year, meeting with families, meeting with the local church to see and to give witness to and be in solidarity with. That's something that I know he continues to advance in wherever he is and given the opportunity to speak. The wonderful thing about New York, and it is sort of like, I mean, for those of us who are from outside New York and beyond the Hudson, it is a very international city. It's unlike any other city in the United States. And so to be headquartered here was, I think, very prescient of the Bishop of Rome, of Pope Pius XI back in 26. Europe was still recovering from World War I. We have this dynamic, prosperous church in the United States, and let's institutionalize this group and place it under the moral authority of the Archbishop of New York, who sort of has a worldwide platform as it is. And Cardinal Dolan is very much the model of Cardinal O'Connor, who used to travel quite frequently, like Cardinal Dolan does, and on behalf of CNEWA. And Cardinal Spellman was also took that position. So there's a whole history here of the relationship between the Archbishop of New York and Kanawha that we're very proud of and grateful for.
Now, to wrap this all up, what are some ways our listeners can help in Kanawha's efforts overseas?
Well, Monsignor Peter Vaccari, who's the president of Kanawha, who's a priest of the Diocese of Brooklyn and Queens, what Monsignor always likes to say, and I want to echo that here, is everyone can help. Everyone can. There are different roles that can be played. One is to pray. We saw this when there was a line some years ago that was drawn in the sand regarding potential invasion of Syria during the Civil War, and the Pope pleaded, asked for prayers, and people prayed, and thank God we didn't cross that Rubicon. We didn't cross that line. Prayer, it does move mountains. It does make tremendous difference. And also morally, it uplifts those who we are praying for. So to pray for the people that we're called to serve, number one, that is our foundation. The second thing is to read, to learn more about what's happening. There's a lot going on in the world of media, as you and I know, Jillian, and we're not just talking about bots and partisan rancor in our media, but now we have a problem with artificial intelligence and having no idea who's writing what. And I'm going to speak for Catholic media here. Catholic media. Listen to podcasts that are coming from respected Catholic organizations like yours, Jillian. Read Catholic newspapers, your diocesan newspaper, your diocesan magazine. Reach out, find out. Religious orders have a long history of serving our people, not just in parishes, but in publishing fantastic publications like St. Anthony Messenger, like America Magazine, like a Ligurian published by the Redemptorists. Search out. It's worth it. It's important. We need to find authentic Catholic materials that give us a Catholic perspective. Okay, not a partisan political perspective, but a truly Catholic, authentically Catholic understanding. Read, go to our website, for example, if you're interested in the Middle East or Eastern Europe, go to CNEWA.org. Read our magazine, which is available online in its entirety. It's every year it's recognized as one of the best Catholic publications in the English-speaking world, and we devote a lot of time and money and resources to getting out the best information that's authentic, that is objective, that is absolutely Catholic, to inform our readers. That's what our job is. So to be informed, so to pray, to be informed, and then to give. It never fails to amaze me. It moves me at times to tears, really. There is not a more generous group in the world than Catholics. I don't care how poor they may be, or how distracted they may be, or how angry they may be. And all of it's legitimate. But Catholics, when they see a need, are the first to respond. And so the generosity that Catholics and American Catholics in particular provide for the whole world is remarkable. And, as Catholics, we're not concerned just about our local parish. We belong to a worldwide community of faith. And we demonstrate that constantly. And so I'm so grateful for American Catholic generosity, North American Catholic generosity, because it has built so much and has saved so many lives and continues to work miracles. Again, when you're giving, though, please be careful to whom you're giving your funds to. Make sure that the organization is reputable. Make sure that their financial statements are available on their websites, that they're audited. That's an important thing. Financial transparency and accountability is very important. We have to build that trust and always nurture the trust between the organization, our leadership and our members. That's something that we work for diligently and constantly here at CNEWA.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Jillian, thank you so much for having us, and keep us in your prayers, and you are assured of ours and your very important work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Capital Compass podcast, and thank you so much, Michael, for coming on the show. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be coming out with a new episode every other week. If you'd like to support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And to catch the latest from the conference, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at NYS Catholic Conf and on Facebook at NYS Catholic Conference. Thanks again, and God bless.